Welcome, friends, to The Hero Beside Me, the podcast that seeks to explore the professional and private lives of working dogs of all kinds. For thousands of years, humans and canines have shared a special bond and an essential partnership, which continues to grow in importance in our society today. Dogs are helping humans in a myriad of ways, performing essential tasks that only they can perform. The more we learn about them, the more endless their potential seems to be. It is my goal to document the way these amazing animals are making an indelible mark on our world with their astonishing abilities, incredible drive, insatiable zest for life, and unconditional love, which they generously bestow upon their humans. Join me as I explore the wonder of these canine heroes beside us. Welcome, listeners. I'm so glad you're here. In today's episode, we're going to focus on dogs who help their humans find things hidden in the forest. In a way, they're treasure hunters. And what is the treasure they seek? First up, we'll talk to Alana McGee, a dog trainer, handler, and owner of Truffle Dog Company, who will explain to us what she and her dogs go looking for in the forest.
Alana, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Introduce yourself. You know, your history with dogs and your company.
I'm Alana, and I am the owner of Truffle Dog Company. So we do a variety of things at Truffle Dog Company, first of all. We teach you and your dog how to find truffles. We also take people out in the woods to go truffle hunting. We, non-COVID times, also sell truffles to restaurants. And I also work as an agricultural consultant on farms that grow them. Or rather, I have a background in animal behavior. So I am trained and qualified to work on behavior cases. And I did a lot with puppies and kind of fear and reactivity. But my niche really is this scent work sports, and even like hyper within that is specifically with truffles. What I do now is kind of a blend of, or a confluence of kind of food science and working with animals, which is a really awesome place to be. And it's just really fun.
Now, just in case there's anyone out there who might be wondering what a truffle actually is, or might be thinking about the little chocolate covered candies.
Truffles are a mushroom. So we're not teaching dogs to go out in the woods and find those delicious little chocolate covered nuggets, although that would be a great party trick. We're teaching them to find a mushroom, essentially. So it's a fungus. But a very fun, quick anecdote is the reason that chocolate truffles look the way they do is back in, oh God, I don't know, like late 1800s in France. It was basically like a fun pun that the chocolatiers in Paris made because there was like a big truffle boom of the mushrooms at that time. So that's where chocolate truffles come from. So we train dogs to do it. So yeah, so to find mushrooms, not chocolate candies.
Now, why would you need a dog to find a mushroom?
Great question. So these specific mushrooms, you can't see. They are underground. So we are using the dog's incredible sense of smell to locate them and tell us where they are so that we can then harvest them.
Is there a lot of value in truffles?
Yeah. So truffles, there are different types. There are actually hundreds of different species. Primarily when people think of truffles, they think of Europe and like Italy and France. And the ones from Europe are actually incredibly valuable. Some of those can actually be farmed. And there are some farms in the US that do it. And that's one of the things that we do is we work on those farms. But we also have wild truffles in the Pacific Northwest and actually all over the Eastern Seaboard. And there's a different kind called a pecan truffle down in Texas and Louisiana. So they have value. They're mainly sold to restaurants as kind of a wholesale product. And you'll see them, you know, certain times of the year kind of as a special thing you'll get on a dish. And that's usually when people see them is in the fall, maybe into winter. Ours are primarily found November through, if I'm lucky, through May. So that's what I was just out doing today, was out looking for truffles with the dogs.
When you said you were a consultant, an agricultural consultant, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So some of those European truffles I was talking about, they can be farmed in agricultural settings. So imagine like an apple orchard. That's not really how they grow. They don't grow with apple trees, but imagine like a big apple orchard. And that's essentially what farming truffles looks like. It's a bunch of hazelnut trees or oak trees in big, long rows, and there can be sometimes thousands of them. And they grow truffle mushrooms. And so sometimes with the hazelnuts, they'll get a dual crop of hazelnuts and truffles. But usually in order to produce like really good hazelnuts, you need different things than you would in order to grow the mushrooms. So where we can't come in on that is essentially as the service providers for the industry. And there's very few of us who actually work in a commercial setting on those orchards. And so you need dogs to find them. They're still underground and you really don't have another way to locate them. Some people have tried creating robots and things like that. But when it comes to getting truffles kind of at their peak ripeness so that you can sell them at market and get the most for them as a commodity, dogs really can't be beaten for that. So we teach the dogs to locate truffles at kind of a peak ripeness. And then we take them out into the orchard to go find them. And as a consultant in that space, I work with the orchard owners often to train their own dogs to do this because many people have pet dogs and you can totally train them to do it. It's a little bit different when we do it professionally with our dogs just because they have more training and experience. But if you have a pet dog and you have a truffle orchard, we always recommend you train them to do it. So we do that and we help the orchard owners work through when to harvest, how to get it to market.
Do they plant them or do they just happen to get lucky and have truffles growing in their orchard?
No, they plant it with the intention of growing truffles. So it's not an easy thing to do. And some of the tree guys who sell you the trees with the truffles will be like, oh, it takes 5 years. That is not quite accurate. So it's more like a 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 year kind of ordeal before you'll get truffles at all.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it takes a while. So it's kind of on par with people who are growing grapes. So there's a lot of similarities between the wine industry and the truffle industry, and there's a lot of symbiosis actually. So we see down in California actually a lot, not a lot, but you know, some vineyards are actually ripping out small sections of vineyard and putting in truffle orchards, both as a diversification crop and as it's a good tourist kind of thing, right? It's a different seasonal activity to bring people in, and they have the infrastructure for it. So, and the growing kind of know-how. But yeah, they farm them with the intention of growing actual truffles.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Well, how did people first discover that truffles or first discover that dogs can help them find truffles?
We have evidence actually dating back to the Roman times and even before that. That
wow.
People were using not only dogs, but that they were eating them. And there's different.
Eating the dogs?
no, good clarification. No, they were using the dogs to find the truffles and eating the truffles. To be clear, no dogs were had. But we have evidence of that. And the ancient Romans used to eat a different kind than we are really into today. But we have written reports of it and, you know, they had some interesting ideas on how they formed, which like in part are correct. So one, they thought that when lightning struck the earth in late summer, that's where a truffle would form. Now, the correlation that we see to like what would actually be happening nowadays is that the rainfall that's associated with those thunderstorms would actually cause those truffles to grow. So it's not completely, you know, out of the blue. It's fascinating. And then it progressed through the years. In the late 1800s, there was a little bug that killed off all of the grapevines in Europe, phylloxera. And when that happened, a whole bunch of land basically became fallow. And naturally, what was going on is there were wild truffles in the forest just beyond vineyards, let's say in France. And when all those grapevines went away, that's when cultivating truffles really kind of got its foothold. So they moved into the areas, those natural forests moved into the areas where the vineyards previously occupied. And people started harvesting them and kind of trying to cultivate them that way. It's a tricky thing to cultivate, but they did manage to kind of start doing it. Back then. So the practice of it's been around for a while.
And they've been using dogs since those ancient times?
They did use dogs back in Roman times. Etruscan times is really what I'm thinking of. And then a lot of people used pigs. The joke that always floats around is that you see little Frenchmen like missing digits on their fingers from shoving their hand in a pig's mouth and trying to get a truffle back. In reality, pigs are super smart and you could train them not to eat the truffles, just like you can a dog. Like, some dogs will eat them too. But a lot of people used to use pigs. In Europe now, almost nobody does. They're outlawed for use for truffle hunting in Italy. And that's because pigs, they have a really big wild boar problem there. And the way pigs hunt for them naturally is to really root up the soil and make a big mess. And that can be really destructive to the truffle environment. So with dogs, a dog can pinpoint where it is and just dig a little bit. And so you're not creating such a big kind of environmental impact.
So you mentioned that they grow in the Pacific Northwest, but also Southern California. And those two places seem to have pretty different climates. So can you grow them anywhere?
Well, so the ones that grow in Southern California are generally those commercially farmed ones. They're going to be the kinds from Europe that are really found on orchards that are cultivated for that purpose. So there are some wild truffles in California, but it's a little bit like the Wild West. Like, nobody really knows where to look. And there are so few trained dogs in California that we as a like scientific knowledge base just don't really know that much about California. The thing is the more we get more trained dogs for truffle hunting all across the U.S., we start finding all kinds of fun, interesting things. Like, for example, when I started, and I've been doing this almost 13 years, a lot of the scientists, and I'm based in Seattle, Washington, there was a small industry in Oregon and for hunting wild truffles, I should say. And they were like, oh, you won't really find much in Washington. But in the back of my head, I was like, well, we have essentially the same habitat as Oregon does. So I bet it's just a matter of kind of honing in on that and figuring it out. And then truth be told, we have them all over Washington state, or I should say Western Washington. So there's a bunch of them. It just takes legwork and getting dogs that are well-trained out in those areas. But yeah, they're very different. So the ones in California are going to be more on those kind of commercially farmed places. And then where we go hunting in the Pacific Northwest, which you're right, is very different kinds of climate. We look in Douglas fir forests that are like those, what you imagine, like those big Northwest trees dripping with moss, super wet, very lush. So it's very different than where you would look down in, say, like Napa and Sonoma.
Yeah. And it's kind of cooler than maybe a lush jungle in Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. Yeah. It's very chilly. So today it was, you know, the high was maybe 41. It was very wet and rainy and what I call authentic truffle hunting weather. It's like very, the joke is like the more miserable it is outside, the better the hunting.
And they're all safe to eat?
All of the true tuber species are safe to eat. So here's where it gets real sciencey. There are, like I said, hundreds of species of these that all get classified as quote unquote truffles. What a truffle really is a fungus that grows underground. So within that, there are subcategories. And the ones that we commonly think of on our dinner plates, everything in that family, yeah, totally safe to eat. And that's primarily what we find in the Pacific Northwest or what is growing on those farms all throughout the U.S., like California and on the East Coast. There are some species which may make you, are unknown, I should say. And there are some species of truffle that you wouldn't want to eat, but the animals eat them and they really like them. But like if you were to find one, you'd cut it open and it would be very powdery inside and just like unappetizing. So just like with any mushroom, you know, we say there are old mushroom hunters and there are bold mushroom hunters, but there are no old bold mushrooms. So you want to be careful, right? Have somebody ID something before you ever eat it. Really. But that's what we train the dogs to find, really specifically the culinary ones. So for the most part, you should be fine.
And how do you train them?
You train a dog slowly. It takes a while. Just like anything with dog training, getting like a really finished, wonderful behavior takes a while. But you start real simply by just introducing them to the odor. And when they do that, we reward them. Now, it's helpful to know what your dog finds rewarding. So for some dogs, that's a toy. For other dogs, that can be a piece of food. And not every piece of food is equal. Like a piece of kibble is very different than a hot dog, let's say. So we find whatever is really, really valuable to the dog. And it may vary from day to day as well, too. But you show them the truffle, essentially, and then we reward them for interacting with it. And that's kind of the basic step. And it's the really foundational step. And it's really important because everything else is based on the fact that whenever they smell this odor, they get rewarded. So you're creating a conditioned response, essentially. So you do that for a while, and then you start playing very basic games, maybe around your house or your backyard, before you ever start burying it or making it more challenging. And then eventually we take them out into different environments. And when you get outside, it starts getting a lot harder because it's just so much more distracting for the dogs, right? So we keep sessions real short, make it super fun. And then eventually we end up taking you to a forest where we know there are truffles. And we have one of our advanced dogs go out beforehand. And basically what we'll do is we'll tag a few of them. So that means our dog will locate them, but I won't touch them. So they won't have human odor on it. And I will put a flag or a marker somewhere nearby. So we generally know where it is. And we'll work with the advanced dogs in that scenario and see if they can make the connection between what's growing natively in the ground versus things that they may have planted previously.
Do you have a certain breed that you prefer to work with?
You know, it's a really good question. And all of our instructors, I think, have a different answer to this. But in general, you know, every breed can do this. It's really about the personality of the dog. You know, we have some students right now with like 5-pound Chihuahua mixes who do it. You know, everything from that to like Great Danes and, you know, Akitas and Huskies. So breeds you wouldn't think normally might be really into it or really that kind of like nose scent hunting dog. Can really like it. So I think it's about finding the individual motivation for the dog. That being said, there's a breed that is traditionally used for truffle hunting in Italy, and it is called, here's my Italian pronunciation attempt, it is called a Lagotto Romagnolo.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, but we just call them Lagotto, or Lagotti would be plural. And they're like a curly-coated water dog, essentially. And they can be great at it. But again, you still have to train them. They're not inherently going to just plop them out in a forest and they'll find truffles, right? You still have to teach them how to do it. So I do have one of those, and she's a lot of fun. She's definitely a working dog and needs a job. So I have that. I really personally like working with gun dogs. So I love Labs. I think they're just big goofballs, and I find that endearing and entertaining. And I'm just kind of a lab person at heart, but you know, all dogs can do this. So like I have the Lagotto. I have a big, he's 14 now, but I have a big black lab golden retriever mix on steroids. Imagine like a 90-pound lap dog. And he used to love doing this. It's too hard. The terrain's too hard for him anymore. So he can't, but he certainly likes trying to do it around the house. And then I have a golden retriever who's our newest hunter. And then I have an Australian Shepherd as well. So, and they can all do it, varying degrees, and they all have very different styles, but they can all do it and they all enjoy it.
And do people use truffle hunting with their dogs? They use that as like, or do they do it as a sport as well?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. So most people are kind of we call it a sport. We do. We call it a nosework sport. It's just a very specific one. So people kind of view it in that lane. There's not a lot of competition on like, you know, winning medals kind of thing. There is, that was developed a few years ago, a truffle hunting competition at the Oregon Truffle Festival called the Joriad. It's open only to what we call novice dogs. So like I, as a professional handler, can't compete in it. So it's people basically training their own dogs to do it. And it's super fun. And it's a great way to kind of, you know, see how your dog is doing and get a chance at doing it. I will say it's much more like nose work for people who are more familiar with that. It's much more like a nose work trial than it is like actual truffle hunting. But that being said, it's super fun. But yeah, most people view it as a sport and just kind of do it for fun. And people who really like going out and go hiking, it's like a fun way to get outside in the fall and winter and early spring and just do something and bond with your dog. I mean, that's a big part of it is, what are other ways that you can be active with your dog and really build your relationship and have a good time? And I think that's where a lot of our students kind of fall in that category.
But then there are people like you who do it for a living or who somehow incorporate it into their living.
Yeah, there are. So really making like an actual living out of this, not that I want to scare people away from, but the truffles are not as valuable as people think. So in order to sell them, there's a lot of steps that go into it. So it's very seasonal. first of all, right? So trying to do this year round as a like your only occupation is incredibly difficult. That's why you don't see many people doing that. So we tend to view it for most people as a sport. There are those of us who have incorporated it into, you know, what we're doing, whether we're dog trainers or professional foragers. Some people are, like, for other things throughout the year. It kind of supplements what they do.
Maybe if you're a chef or, like you said, an orchard owner.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of chefs. We've had a couple of really good chefs recently who they've just, you know, during the pandemic have gotten dogs and so are starting to train them for it. And so they're really excited to get out there and kind of forage their own ingredients. So it's definitely like something really, really, really fun to do. It's pretty rare that you find somebody who like that's their only occupation, but it is like super fun and people really enjoy it.
Well, for you, what motivates you to do it?
You know, there's a few things. One thing that I really enjoy is sharing knowledge and information with people. So whether that comes in the form of education or teaching students how to do this, one of my absolute favorite things is to take groups of people out truffle hunting in the woods so they can really form this kind of connection with nature and understand kind of food in an ecosystem, let's say. So I really, really love that. And that motivates me just intrinsically on a personal level. I also love the opportunity to get to spend time with my dogs and just really build that bond, and to be outside wandering through the woods makes me just, you know, again, very, very happy. But I would say kind of creating other opportunities for others and really educating in the space and sharing information and getting people excited about it and getting excited about the world around them and nature is a big driver.
In your opinion, what makes dogs such good partners?
Yeah, you know, that's a really, really good question. I would say, you know, however many thousands of years of evolution together. You know, it's the communication between the two of you. It's not the human, you know, dictating to the dog, hey, let's go find this thing. It's a two-way communication. And I think they are a very willing participant, and the human side of that has to be too. So with truffle hunting, we always say it's a team. It's a team sport. It's both of you guys. And I think
makes them good partners.
Good partners. You know, just their openness, I would say, to want to work with you. And you have to be receptive to that and also understand when and read them when they're done, right? It's a mutual respect, I think is really important. So, yeah.
So you've mentioned that you have instructors and students. So do you just have classes for people with their dogs in your area, or if someone listening somewhere else was interested?
Absolutely. Great question. So we have a few instructors. I think most of us right now are based in the Seattle area. However, we do have one on the East Coast. So we do in-person classes in the Seattle area right now. I mean, small group ones as are, you know, COVID appropriate. And during the season, we do that. And then we also this year started doing a lot of Zoom classes, which people and students have loved. And it's been really, really fun. So our instructor who teaches basically the foundation level through intermediate has been doing just fabulous Zoom classes where it meets once a week. And then we've got, you know, forums where you post videos, and we do fireside chats every week where we talk with everybody and get to discuss anything people want. It's been really fun. So we have had actually a lot of students from all over the country and a couple from Canada. So, you know, we've had students from as far away as, you know, the Carolinas, and Florida and Missouri, and then a bunch of Californians, and obviously a bunch of people here in the Northwest, because that's where a lot of our wild truffles are more easily found, shall I say. But it's, you know, anyone can do it anywhere. And it, you know, again, it's surprising what you end up finding when you have a well-trained dog, even in places we don't think truffles exist, right? Like, we didn't think there were that many on the East Coast until the last 5 years or so. Turns out there might be quite a bit. It's just a matter of people figuring out like where to look for these things. And when you have a well-trained dog for it, they'll show you.
Listeners, we're currently trying to determine the future of this show, and we would really appreciate your feedback. If you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you'd fill out our listener feedback survey. You can find a link to it in the show notes,
or if you go to herobeside.me, click on the podcast button. You'll see a listener feedback survey button at the top of that next page. It only takes about 2 minutes to complete, and we would really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Back to the show.
Not unlike hunting for truffles, other dogs are tasked with finding antlers that deer have shed.
Roger Siegler, owner of Antler Dogs, gives us the inside scoop on what these dogs do.
I was in business. I was a professional man. I owned several international companies. But training dogs has always been my love and passion. I grew up on a farm where we had horses and dogs and chickens and all kinds of different animals. And from the time that I was, I think, probably 24 years old, I started training dogs professionally. I've trained just about every kind of dog you can think of, anything from bird dogs to blood trail dogs to bite dogs. But prior to that, I'd been messing around with having lived on a farm with horses and dogs and other animals all of my life. So it's been a lifelong passion to get to know and understand animals better. We invented hunting horns with a dog 15 years ago. Over the last 15 years, we've trained over 500 of these dogs. We have them all over the United States, Canada, and in Europe.
When you say we invented hunting horns with dogs, break down that sentence. What does it mean?
I never was much of a deer hunter, okay? Now, I wasn't, well, in fact, I wasn't a deer hunter at all. Now, the reason I wasn't a deer hunter, I grew up on a farm in Kansas where I never saw a deer until I was probably in my late 20s. Now, in Kansas at that time, when they finally opened the season, it was a draw. If you were lucky enough to draw a tag and you killed a deer on opening day, your season was over and you couldn't do it with dogs. Okay. And to me, the whole sport, any sport that I'm involved with, whether or not it would be coon hunting or seizure dogs or you name it, okay, is really built around your dog. And so I didn't really have any interest. But one day my wife and I were riding horses, and I was looking around on the ground, and she said, "What are you looking for?" I said, "I'm looking for deer antlers." She said, "Like those two right there?" She pointed down to the ground, and there were two antlers there. And I said, "Yeah, just like that." And so she said, "Well, why don't you train dogs to find those things?" And I guess it just any great idea, someone would say, "Wow, why didn't I think of that?" Because it was right there from the very beginning.
Can you just explain why you were looking for antlers in the first place?
It's a sport that deer hunters love because it gets them back out in the woods. They can use them for a lot of different ways. Let's just say that they're going to use it for forecasting. Well, in the fall after the deer season, if they go out looking for the horns, if they find the horns off of that big buck that they wanted to shoot, they now know that it wasn't killed during the hunting season. And they might even know approximately where that buck is. So they use it for forecasting. We have people who have high fence deer operations that buy the dogs to find the horns in their commercial operations. Whenever you add a dog to the sport, it doesn't make any difference if you're rabbit hunting or coon hunting or Schutzen sports, or it doesn't matter. They make the sport. Deer grow their horns all year long, and then they fall off in the spring. And these guys like to go out and find those horns for bragging rights as much as anything. So it's a combination of just a lot of different things that the deer hunter or people who like to hunt horns have in common, all built around a dog.
So you say that you invented the sport. No one else used dogs for this purpose before?
No.
Your wife had that idea. How do you know?
Well, because we did a Google search. Now, what happened was that once I started to see the possibility, I called one of the top deer magazines in the country, North American Whitetail, and I asked them if they would like to do an article on hunting horns with a dog. And they agreed to do the article. I submitted it, and I had over 200 phone calls from people all over the United States that wanted these dogs. Now, because I was already a professional trainer, it just led me to believe that there was really something here that was of great interest. It's become the fastest growing dog sport in the country. It takes a special kind of dog, and it takes a special kind of understanding. So at that time, I had a pit bull and a German shepherd, and I started with them just as an experiment to see if possibly they could, that they might be a breed that you could use to do this. The pit bull was pretty good, but he was real slow and methodical. So immediately we started testing other breeds, German short hairs, German wire hairs, Brittany's, you name it. We were looking for a very specific kind of dog that would perform the task at hand. Now, retriever trainers think these dogs are retrievers. Well, they're kind of retrievers, but what they really are is they're detection dogs. Now, when you're training detection dogs, whether or not it be a bomb dog, drug dog, cancer detection dog, seizure dog, it doesn't matter, okay? They're simply identifying a certain object or smell that you want them to identify. So if you're a retriever trainer and don't understand detection dogs, you're kind of lost. Now, the other part of these dogs is they're hunting dogs. Now, if you've never trained hunting dogs or detection dogs, they're a combination of retriever, hunting dog, detection dog. Those three characteristics make up the antler dog. Certain dogs fit the specific skill sets that are required to do this work. Prior to training antler dogs, I was training dogs to bite people using a training method called Schützen. Well, when you're trying to evaluate your dog, let's say it's a German Shepherd, you're looking for very specific types of drives, meaning can the dog do the job and do the job at a high level? So we started doing the same thing with our labs. We started evaluating. We called it drafting your antler dog. In the world of human sports, you'd never draft a player until you knew what his skill sets were going to be. So that's what we started doing with these dogs. When we get them back from the breeder, okay, at 8 weeks of age, we start testing them to see if they have all of the skill sets, drives, to be able to do the work at a very high level. The dogs that we've chosen, labs seem to have all of the skills, the retrieve, the hunt, the disciplines that are required to do this work at a high level.
Do antlers have monetary value?
Well, I sold the dog to a guy who made antler furniture, okay? And he made a very nice living making furniture out of antlers. He bought a dog from me, and he called me a year or so after he bought the dog and wanted to order another dog. And I said, how is the deer furniture business? And he said, well, with the recession, he says it's pretty tough. He said, but I'm on to something new. And I said, what's that? He says, antler chews. Now, they are chews for your dog to chew on. He said, Roger, he said, this year, my wife and my daughter and myself, we're going to sell $1 million worth of antlers to Walmart, Kmart, you name it. It's the hottest thing in dog treats, antler chews. And he said, next year, I'm going to sell $2 million. And within 3 years, we're going to sell $3 million worth of antlers. He said, the only problem we're really having is getting enough in volume. He said, we now buy them a ton at a time. Now, there's a lot of other people in the market now that are selling antler chews for dogs as well. But that's just one little niche.
Now that the sport of antler hunting with a dog is so popular, how does it feel to know that you and your wife created something that's become so far-reaching?
It feels fabulous, okay? Because it's the people that you meet along the way that come in and spend time in our home. Everybody that buys a dog from us, I don't care if they're coming from Europe, Alaska, or Canada, wherever, they have to come spend time with us here before we'll ever sell them a dog. Because I'm not going to just put a dog in a box and ship it to somebody. I'm not going to do that. It doesn't make any sense. Because we want these dogs to become part of the family, and we want to be assured that these dogs are getting the best possible homes. Now, the people, the kind of money they're spending on these dogs, we have a pretty good idea that they're going to be well taken care of. But we've had 5 people fly in their own jet planes to get these dogs. It's impressive. So all that stuff combined makes you feel like you've really done something good.
So you said earlier that all of the sports you participate in revolve around dogs. Why is that?
Well, I think if you ask anybody if they're a pheasant hunter or if they're a coon hunter or training bite dogs, they just enhance the sport dramatically. And besides that, you're doing it with your best friend. So let's just say a guy doesn't like to hunt by himself. Now he's got his hunting buddy, his dog, and you work as a team.
Listeners, if you'd like to get in touch with either Alana or Roger.
Yeah, so if someone wanted to get in touch with us, the easiest way would probably be to shoot us an email. We do have a website. We're in the middle of redoing it. So thank you for bearing with us. It's just truffledogcompany.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram under the same name, just like Truffle Dog Co. And one of us will get back to you. Yeah, we've got a lot of very, very experienced instructors. So it's myself, Victoria, who is also a certified professional dog trainer, and Karen Pryor graduate, and same with Erica, who has a big background in scent sports and agility and all kinds of other stuff. So we have quite a kind of a robust wheelhouse of folks to help problem solve and answer questions and just help you have fun with your dog.
Well, we have a book out on Amazon called Antler Dog Tales. We have a video that runs for an hour. It talks about evaluating and training your dog.
And listeners, you can find more information about this at antlerdogs.com. Also, all of this info will be in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to the show today. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or a number of other platforms.
As I mentioned earlier, I'm your host, Shauna T. I'm a professional photographer, and I'm currently working on a photography project about working dogs. If you would like information about this project, please visit herobeside.me and sign up for the newsletter. Again, that's herobeside.me. Thanks so much. See you next time.